Welcome to Oikast. I hear green.
The podcast presented by Oikos Vienna.
Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of Oikast. I'm here today with four colleagues from Oikos Vienna. Together, we will talk about the SDGs, the Sustainable Development Goals of the United Nations. Each of us has chosen one specific SDG and will tell us more about it. But first, what are the SDGs anyway? The Sustainable Development Goals, short SDGs, were adopted by the United Nations in 2015 as a universal call to end poverty, protect the planet, and ensure that by 2030, all people enjoy peace and prosperity. The 17 SDGs are integrated. They recognize that action in one area will affect outcomes in others, and that development must balance social, economic, and environmental sustainability. I would like to ask you to introduce yourselves now and tell us what the SDG is about and why you chose it.
Hi, I'm Malena, and I have chosen the SDG 4, Quality Education. SDG 4 aims at providing each and everyone around the world with free access to quality education until 2030. This major goal comes with many specific targets, like achieving literacy or ensuring a safe, non-violent, and inclusive learning environment for everyone. Education is the number one factor when it comes to escaping poverty and climbing up the social ladder, which is why this SDG is of high importance. I have chosen SDG 4 because I strongly believe that education does make a difference. As the saying goes, if you give a man a fish, you feed him for a day. If you teach him how to fish, you feed him for a lifetime. And of course, it is important to have foreign aid from Western NGOs in poorer countries, but at the end of the day, it's no solution. And the local society needs to learn to provide themselves with, let's say, for example, an economic framework that works for a long time. And also, it's not just about developing countries. Education counts everywhere.
Hello, everyone. My name is Melina, and I chose the SDG 13, Climate Action. So as the UN defines it, it's related to the urgent action to combat climate change and its impact. And it sees three major areas. So first of all, it's strongly about education to create awareness among the people. What climate action is all about and how urgent the climate crisis is, but also fostering innovation to kind of promote that transition. But most importantly, it's about adherence to our climate commitments. And they also see the changes that are necessary to promote climate action as providing huge opportunities to modernize our infrastructure, which would create new jobs, create a prosperity. And there are basically five main targets the UN sees. So it's about strengthening resilience and adaptive capacity to climate-related disasters. Most importantly, probably to integrate climate change measures into policies and planning. Like I said before, the education part, build knowledge and capacity to meet climate change, implement the UN Framework Convention, to which I'm going to come back to later, but also to promote mechanisms to raise capacity for planning and management. And I personally chose this SDG because I think it's become very obvious for most people that it's very urgent that we do something about the climate crisis. And it's this year and the next few years that will count to determine whether we will manage to combat this crisis or not.
Hello everyone. My name is Swapnil, and I chose the Sustainable Development Goal number 17. It is about building and renewing partnerships for achieving the remaining 16 Sustainable Development Goals. It has 19 targets in five categories, namely finance, information and communication technology, data monitoring and accountability, capacity building, and trade, with a total of 24 indicators. As my colleague Marlena duly mentioned, that the problems are not specific to developing countries. We are all together in this, and this goal is all about global partnerships. We are facing a lot of problems in the global partnerships, One of them, which is scarce financial resources and trade tensions, some technological obstacles, and also a severe lack of data. The recent COVID-19 pandemic has delivered an unprecedented shock to the global system and has also exposed its fallacies. I chose it because of the fundamental truth about human lives, which revolve around partnerships and cooperation. Without these two building blocks, implementation of the remaining 16 goals will be a near impossible task.
Hi, my name is Lucia and I chose SDG 5, gender equality. This goal aims to address deep-rooted and multifaceted gender discrimination, thereby empowering women and girls around the world. Awareness, equal opportunities, diversity, equal pay, and anti-discrimination laws are key in the action to achieve these goals. Ending discrimination against women and girls is a prerequisite for a peaceful, prosperous, and sustainable world. I also think this SDG is connected especially to Malena's SDG, SDG 4, because education plays a crucial role in ending gender discrimination. So I was wondering, since the SDGs have been established in 2015, which is already 6 years ago, I'm wondering if you guys know what is the state of the play related to the SDGs that you chose?
So when it comes to quality education, I can say that in 2018, about 260 million children did not attend a formal school setting, which is nearly a fifth of children in that particular age group. So that is still quite a lot. However, in the last couple of years, the enrollment rates were increased substantially, especially for girls. And like Lucia just mentioned, of course, the SDG quality education is heavily intertwined with gender equality, because many girls in poor countries are not allowed to go to school and receive education. So that has really become better in the last couple of years. And the higher enrollment rates also help to conquer illiteracy as well. However, the pandemic has been a nightmare for schools and children around the world. This has really slowed down the progress overall, because schools were closed and teachers had less control over children's learning progress. So especially in poor countries where the digital infrastructure is not developed and very poor, that was devastating. And globally, the main area of focus of SDG 4 needs to be the sub-Saharan African area, where more than half of the children are not enrolled in a school yet, and also refugee children who are escaping violence in their own countries, like the Middle East, for example, and land in refugee camps in Europe, where they don't really get any education, and that's very problematic. So in 2017, the numbers showed that around 4 million refugee children around the world did not receive any formal education, and that number will only increase with more refugees coming in the next few years, for example, from Afghanistan. So I think that there is a lot that has to be done in the next. There have been some achievements since 2015, I would say.
So when it comes to climate action, I think the most relevant view should be towards the COP that just took place last month, from the end of October to the middle of November, which is the climate change conference of the parties. And I think the Paris conference was one of the first big COPs that happened that drew international attention toward it. And the COP26 that took place in Glasgow this year was kind of the look back towards Paris and see to see where we're standing now, and to make further improvements to be able to achieve the goal of staying below, far below a 2 degree global warming. And there were a few steps towards progress made in the. So for the first time, nations agreed to begin reducing coal-fired power and to start eliminating subsidies on other fossil fuels, which was really a first time event in the COP context. But as this example already shows, coming from the coming from especially nations like China and India, the wording was kind of kept a bit vague deliberately. So instead of a phase out from coal, we now have a phase down. So while there were many strong commitments made, it's really not enough. We will now achieve a 2.5 or 2.9 degree in the year 2100. And with all the pledges that were made from all the nations, we would come towards a 2.1 degree warming in until 2100, which basically really shows that there's so much more that needs to be done, even though there was progress made. And as Greta, for example, put it, it is obvious that we cannot solve this crisis with the same methods that got us into the first place. And in addition to that, which I think also really shows very nicely how this SDG relates to many other SDGs, because it's basically also a big social issue in the question of how we tackle climate change, is that this COP was called the most exclusionary COP ever. So while there have been many pledges about how important it is that less developed countries receive more support from more developed countries, many actions in that direction have not been put forward. For example, when it comes to the loss and damage funding, which would have the goal that especially, but not exclusively, like small island states would receive money from industrial states, which have very clearly contributed to many climate disasters that have already happened there, many natural catastrophes, to be able to support them in mitigating those crises. There has not been an agreement in that direction. So, as I said, while there's been a lot of progress, right now, the state of play related to this SDG is that there is still a lot to be done in the future.
Melina, I think you already mentioned that the COP26 earned a lot of critics. Do you have hope that COP27 is going to have a better impact and a more positive impact on climate crisis?
I mean, I certainly hope so. I think it will all depend on like the few years that will come, as I mentioned in the beginning. The one side is countries and nations and governments making pledges and committing to certain goals. But the other part is really seeing some implemented changes. And I think that's the step where the COP is just the beginning. But then the next step would be up to the nations to agree on policies that will bring us closer to that. And it's high time to see all of those actions. I mean, another positive development in those in the COP was that the NDCs, all the goals that the nations agree on and put forth, all the reduction commitments they put forth, they will now be evaluated every year. So there will be a report published every year and not every, I think, 4 or 5 years as it was before. So there's definitely a lot of effort there to increase the urgency or to put more awareness on the urgency and keep countries more accountable. But in the end, the COP doesn't really provide any framework to punish or hold states responsible. It's all very based on agreements and on states implementing actions on their own. And since it's a very complex world and really a global efforts in coordination with each other and needed, I think it will be a very complicated task will come, and it will be a lot of more efforts needed in the future.
Regarding global partnerships, the major issue has been the severe pressure on foreign direct investment, which is expected to fall by around 40%. The fiscal impacts of this pandemic are leading to debt distress in a lot of countries, which limits their monetary space for investing in recovery, which includes access to vaccines, also investments in climate change and the other goals, which is a threat for the recovery period to continue. In terms of finance, as of 2021, we have 130 economies for which taxes, social contribution and grants accounts for around 1/3 of the GDP on average. In addition, the overall tax burden is 1/4 of the GDP in advanced economies, and around 1/5, that is 18 to 20% of the GDPs, in emerging markets and developing economies. The average proportion of the government expenditure, which is funded by taxes, is 67% in developed economies and 62% in developing economies, which is not a major difference. In terms of information and communications, just over half of the world's population was online, and hence there is a large digital divide among regions. For example, while more than 90% of the population in Europe and Northern America had internet access, only 20% were connected to the global internet network in the least developed countries. For capacity building, the total ODA, the total, in terms of capacity building, the total official development assistance accounted to around 36 billion in 2021, and it represented 15% of the total global sector's allocable aid. And this figure has been quite stable since 2010, which is the last decade. And the main industries which received this assistance were energy policy, public administration and bureaucracy, and the financial sector, which received around 15 billion out of the 36 billion mentioned. In terms of global trade, the worldwide weighted tariff average remains steady as around 2%. For agriculture and clothing, they have the highest tariff averages, which is around 6%. And for clothing, it's around 4%. For 2021, there were some small but still more significant improvements recorded for at least textiles and clothing in the least developing countries. Now coming to data monitoring and accountability, from 2016 to 2021, the extent and the level to which development providers used countries' national statistics and other planning tools to design their own development projects actually decreased from 65 to 61%. Also, of the 114 countries that provide or receive development cooperation, fewer than half reported, which is around 56 countries, reported overall progress. And this need for reliable data continues to increase, also to address the impacts of the pandemic. But even now, many countries still lack the resources to produce reliable data. In a nutshell, there have been a lot of steps taken forward, and there has been a lot of steps taken backward. So we have achieved a lot, but there is still more to be done.
I think Swapnil and also Malena already mentioned that it always depends on where you look globally, of course. And related to SDG 5, gender equality, on the whole, it doesn't look very good. A lot has happened in the last few decades, but we are still a long way from where we want and should be. And according to UN Women, there are still 49 countries that have no laws protecting women from domestic violence. And in 18 countries, men can even prevent their wives from working. And worldwide, 750 million women and girls were married before the age of 18. Even if you look at Europe, only about 33% of all management positions are held by women, and the gender pay gap is still at 15%. So you cannot say that gender equality is just a problem of developing countries.
So what is your personal experience with the SDG that you have chosen? Because I think it is It was very hard for me at least to choose one SDG because they are also integrated and feel all equally important in building a better, fairer and more sustainable world. So I was wondering, what's your personal experience with this?
Women have been fighting for equality for centuries, basically, and it makes me even mad that yet even today we have not reached a point where men and women are treated equally. Even in Austria, in a developed democratic social and welfare state, one observes the stereotypical treatment of gender roles. I know for myself that I want to pursue a career after graduation, and I definitely don't want any barriers in my way because of my gender. Often it's just small remarks or sexist jokes that are considered insignificant, but this is exactly the kind of thing that reproduces the unequal treatment of women and girls in a society. And that is what I experienced also here in, you know, a Western society in Austria.
My personal experience has always been the thought that without a cooperation or without a partnership, without an acceptance of the problems from the other side, achieving a solution to the problem is quite difficult. As my colleague Stewie mentioned about the problem regarding gender equality, it's not an issue specific to women. It's an issue which is society-wide. And if there is a section of society which is unequal, does not get equal opportunities, it harms the society as a whole. And I think that is what needs to be realized. And this is why I chose the last sustainable development goal, which is regarding building and strengthening partnerships globally for sustainable development. Because there could be plans, there could be goals, there could be everything. But without the fundamental nature of cooperation and acceptance, achieving any goal is difficult, be it sustainable development goals or personal development goals.
I think was what Swapnil really nicely emphasized is the importance of working together. And I really like the part where you said that you need to understand the other side. And I think that's where it really nicely relates to my SDG and to what I already talked about a bit in the COP, is that you have globally countries that are at very different stages in their development. And when we look at our nations and all the industrialized nations, we have profited so far so much from our fossil fuel intense economies. And this is also the point where it becomes a global partnership issue, but also a social issue that probably relates to all of the other SDGs very directly, the question of how you can enable other countries that have not had the chance so far to develop in the way we did, or maybe in like so far as we did, but also to make sure that we're managing the climate crisis at the same time. So it's not only about each and every country making their own pledges and looking at themselves or what they can do, but it's also about taking responsibilities from our side of the world. And that's also what the COP really didn't really manage to do, even though there were many pledges about the importance of participation from young people, for example, but also about human rights and about the rights of indigenous people, which are just proportionally affected by climate crisis already. So again, there were a lot of pledges and commitments, and everyone agreed on how important it was. But on the other side, when we look at direct action, when we look at the money that's really necessary for countries that are just trying to catch up, but more importantly, are dealing with the catastrophes right now, there's not really enough efforts from our countries of this side of the world to support them. And that is where it becomes really clear that there's cooperation needed. And that's also what kind of shows that climate crisis is not all that this SDG, to put it differently, is not only about tackling climate crisis, but also about kind of catching up to the globalized world we already have. It's all of it is interrelated, as we've seen the COVID pandemic as well. So it's now more important than ever to try to work on those collaborations, to work together and help each other, which is just as important for the others as it is for us, and for us as the whole world. And to come back to your question about my personal experience, I mean, I have a strong focus in my studies right now at uni when it comes to climate crisis, particularly the question of what the impact of our economic system is to the environment and how it contributed to the climate crisis we're in now, and what should we do differently. And if it's one thing that I've learned so far, one thing that can sum up everything since I started this main focus, is that I have a much deeper understanding of how difficult our situation is and how much change there is necessary, how much rethinking there is necessary and how urgent it is. So at times it can be very difficult to remain hopeful and not say, okay, it's already lost, what should we do about it? Also, when there's so much hope coming up, when we look at the COP, for example, and then there's a lot of disappointment afterwards. But I think if there's anything that we should take from this disappointment and this anger that's also there a lot when I think about this issue is that we should just draw a lot of motivation from it to do everything that's in our power to force the change that is necessary, to not only think about what we do in our private life, about our own action, but also to find ways to be politically active, to find ways in which we can increase the pressure on policymakers and show them that we care so much about the future of our planet, and it's extremely urgent and we need to act now.
I can also really relate to what Melina and Swapnil just said. I think it's really about building a foundation for a better, healthier and more sustainable world. And I think that quality education just does that. I think education is building the foundation for gender equality. It is building the foundation for better sustainable world, because you learn to act more sustainable and responsible. And so that is why I find this SDG so very important. And I have also been working as a tutor for children for a long time now, and for some time also in a Red Cross institution in Vienna, helping children that came from difficult backgrounds and weren't really provided with quality education in their schools. And there it was just so amazing for me to see how those kids were thriving once you provided them with some attention and help and showed them how capable they actually are. And all these kids went to schools somewhere in the 15th district in Vienna, to one of those so-called problem schools. And sometimes I just couldn't believe the stories they told me about school. I mean, we're living in Austria, a very wealthy country and very privileged, but still it is very difficult for many children to gain access to free public quality education. And in my opinion, especially children who have a migration background and whose native language isn't German should be provided with special aid in school and receive some extra attention, but that's just not the case. And there are not enough teachers in those schools. They are completely overwhelmed with the high number of children in their classes. And of course, it's not their fault, but they just seem to completely give up sometimes. And I can only imagine that COVID even worsened the situation, because children couldn't even go to school anymore and won't receive much help at home sometimes, because their parents don't even speak German, or they just don't have the capacity to help them with their homeworks. So yeah, all in all, I find that very worrying. And as I said, we're talking about Austria, a very privileged country. So you can only imagine what the situation in other countries it's like. And so, yeah, I think that each and every child should have the right to go to school and earn a quality education, to get this knowledge base, to become a responsible and good person as an adult. And we really have to work towards that.
I think it's really cool, Marlena, that you said that you are contributing actively yourself to achieving this particular SDG on education. And since we have been talking a lot about problems right now, I would be particularly interested in what can each of us do to achieve this specific SDG that you chose.
Well, I can just continue about that. First of all, I find it very important to raise awareness for that topic in your surroundings, because as I said, not even in Austria, quality education is provided for everybody. And secondly, I think that with this SDG, it is very important to get involved, as you said, and it's not hard, it's so easy. You don't have to have a professional, you don't have to study becoming a teacher or something like that. You just have to be there for the children and provide them with attention and help them. And I think everyone has some talents that he or she can pass along to those children. But you could also just donate books or other materials to local schools if you'd rather do that. Or yeah, just as I said, get active as a mentor or a tutor to support children with homework, for example. There are many institutions where you can do that, for example, in Vienna at the Red Cross, but also many others. I think the Caritas also has many institutions. There are also many great volunteering initiatives in that field internationally for those who would like to spend some time abroad. So if you're interested in contributing to quality education, take a look online and find an initiative near you. There are many.
So when it comes to what the society can do, I think the most important point I already made, but just to emphasize that we need to increase the pressure. But I think what's already really necessary to be realized by most of the people that the climate crisis is that urgent and that there will be a huge change coming towards us, a huge change in the way we live our lives and a huge change in the way we relate to the environment and in the way we organize our society. And it will come either way. I mean, the climate crisis will come if we don't do something about it. So I think it's not only this sense of urgency, but also it's this looking at your personal life and realizing how you yourself are contributing to climate change. I think there's been a lot of progress in the recent years when it comes to having more awareness, what kind of actions in your private life, what kind of consumption contributes to your CO2 emissions, stuff like that. The fact that taking several only day short vacations via plane is not the best thing to do and stuff like that. I think that's a really important step towards the right direction. But on the other side, we see improvement on when it comes to political decisions on our way forward. But these are only very, very small and can only be just the beginning. And then you just need to realize that policymakers can, to a certain point, only go so far as their support from the public, and they will be in the position to impose radical changes that will be necessary to achieve our goals. And I think it's really important to show the support from our point of view, from the point of view from the society, that we're ready to accept these changes as well. We're ready to accept our responsibility, and we are all ready to do whatever necessary to prevent this massive crisis that will change our life either way. It's just up to us to decide if we want to be part on deciding of how this change will be and trying to save as much of our current healthy and happy life as possible, or if it will be a change that's imposed upon us and that will lead to many disasters. So I think what really everybody should do is not only start with the view on yourself and the way you can change your consumption habits or other habits that contribute to climate change. I think that's a very important step, but also that will not be enough. I think the most important thing is really to find ways, just like Malena said, find organizations that are near to you, educate yourself and show your support to this fundamental change that is necessary. Go to protests, show your support either way.
Building upon what Malena said, it is the small things that matter. We might think that the governments and the businesses and all these big institutions can eradicate sustainability problems by themselves, but it is not the case. It is in the end, it's the aggregate of individuals. And each one of us has the potential to affect positive changes towards sustainability. It can be as easy as bringing up these goals and their impacts during your lunch. Have a chat with your colleagues about this. It's as easy as turning off your bulbs when not in use. It's as easy as taking a bicycle or a public transportation mode to work. It is as easy as recycling your paper, your plastics correctly. And the thing you can also do is networking with like-minded people also aware about sustainability like we do. Use your social media accounts to spread awareness. Join such events. It all boils down to your lifestyles. And once we lead a sustainable lifestyle, it would set an example for others as well. And all of this, all of these small steps would turn into a snowball that would eventually compel governments and businesses to follow eco-friendly practices.
Building on what you just said, Swapnil, I do agree that individual awareness and also individual actions matter. But at the same time, I feel like, of course, we're living in kind of a bubble, but I just see that in my bubble, the awareness and the actions to achieve, for example, like climate crisis or also gender equality, they all do it and they all try to have a very, very positive impact. But as far as I see, it's not enough and it's not working. So I do feel like that governments and other transnational institutions and also companies, they have a lot of power and they really need to use that power to prevent climate crisis and also the social crisis that comes with that.
Yeah, thanks, Lucia, for kind of stressing the point I was trying to make before. I think it's extremely important and extremely encouraging to see how much the awareness has risen and also the support and the individual action that have increased so much in the last years. It may be the way we consume certain stuff or maybe eating vegan or taking the bike, just like Swapnil said. And I think that's all very, very important, but it shouldn't be only down to us and it shouldn't, the responsibility of enacting the change. And I think that's important for every single SDG, shouldn't be on individual action, but it should be on the big, where the big power lies, the big policymakers, but also on the international level working together. I think that would be the easy way out, even though it wouldn't in the end provide us with a way out, just relying on every single person making the right consumption decision. Just for example, looking at the example of taking your bike or taking public transport instead of the car, there's so many areas, for example, in Austria, where that's just simply not possible. It would take you, I don't know, maybe 2 hours to commute to your work. And I think that's just completely unrealistic and would create so much backlash, and we need the support of the general public to enact those big changes. So that we'll need some big changes will be necessary from the policy makers to support us in making the right decisions. And I think that's where it's really mutually enforcing. They need to support us, but we also need to show our support and show how important it is to us.
Yes, I can totally agree with that, Melina. I think it's also pretty unfair that way too often politicians and even NGOs or other initiatives outsource the responsibility for, let's say, for example, climate change to consumers and to individuals, when in the case of climate change, for example, and CO2 emissions, it's some big corporations that are doing most of the CO2 pollution and not consumers. And then people are like, yeah, don't buy plastic bottles, rules and don't take your car to the supermarket and things like that, when we all know that that's not the huge problem. I mean, of course, I feel like everyone can make a difference, but let's be realistic and focus on the bigger level, I think. So I think it would be interesting to talk a bit about the changes that can be made on a societal level for each SDG. Do you have some input on that?
I think I already mentioned that I think that nation states have a lot of power to work on the SDGs, also according to SDG 5, gender equality. Because I think, as I already mentioned also, is that education plays a crucial role in achieving this goal. And the nation state has the power to legitimate teaching of gender roles, especially in kindergarten and the education system in general, so that gender stereotypes are not created in children in the first place. And of course, it is also important to have laws that prevent domestic violence, discrimination against women and girls, and make transparent payment compulsory. And it's also particularly important that complaints about discrimination and violence especially are taken seriously, and that drastic countermeasures are taken, because that is what we see in Austria right now, that domestic violence is huge also here, and we hear of cases and cases almost every week. And it's so important that these are taken very seriously and that there are drastic measures and especially countermeasures taken against those violence actions.
Yes, definitely. When it comes to quality education, what I can say is that I think it's very important to see the value of education on a societal level. So I think we can be very thankful to be able to have access to really good public schools in Austria, and should be grateful for teachers doing their best in a very stressful time like the pandemic at the moment. And as I've mentioned before, the main area of focus of this SDG is the sub-Saharan region. So Western countries like the EU countries, Austria should definitely support that region in establishing an educational system that really works. We have to build the foundation for that. And I think it's our responsibility to help them with that, also financially. So the Austrian government definitely has to raise more funds for that. I mean, in so many countries, their basic school infrastructure like drinking water or electricity is still missing. And as developed countries, we have to make sure that they don't lack that infrastructure anymore. But in Europe, it is also quite important to focus on this refugee problem, because there are many refugees coming from other countries, especially from the Middle East, and they need to be provided with quality education, for example, in refugee camps, in order to be integrated into society in the best way. So that's also a thing we should focus on a societal level.
Since we have already been talking about solutions now, I would be interested in, what do you think does Oikos, especially Oikos Vienna, contribute in achieving your particular SDG?
So like I said before, my personal focus on education is kind of trying to combine tackling the climate crisis and ensuring that we protect our environment and the way our economy operates. And I think that's also where Oikos is extremely important in showing that there's no economy versus environment. I mean, there often is, but there doesn't have to be. And it's extremely important to see, to kind of think, not only to kind of, but to really think about the economy as embedded in the environment, and to extend the way we think about our economy as embedded in the environment and as having major implications towards our environment. And one of the most important things that Oikos does in this respect is really trying to educate other business and economic students that will be probably the future leaders, and also having real power and a lot of decision-making power in that regard and determining of how our future economic system will work. And we're just trying to raise awareness of the problem. I think that's been very successful so far, but also trying to raise different topics that relate to this. I mean, there have been questions related to sustainable consumption or sustainable fashion, sustainable finance. And that just goes to show that in whichever area you specialize, whichever area you look when it comes to business and economics, there's always a factor that's relevant for sustainability. And I think that goes to show for every different SDG. And so one of our main goals is definitely to not only raise awareness, but also to really often start a thinking process and to start a discussion process and to educate people more in that regard to make sure that they make the right decisions for us and for our planet in the future.
In my opinion, Oikos Vienna also makes a very important contribution to education, quality education, because the Oikos Vienna sustainable education team works closely with the WU Vienna to introduce new sustainability related courses in the curriculum for like business, economics, social sciences, which is very important since the number of courses with sustainability focus is rather limited at the moment. So for example, at the moment they are collecting best practice ideas for such courses to develop a database in cooperation with WU. And of course, we also provide the public with valuable information by hosting expert talks, doing workshops, or publishing this podcast. And I have now mainly talked about education in the sense of educating children, but of course, education counts at every step in your life and at every age. So educating the broad public and also focusing on students and universities is, of course, also very important.
Adding to what Marlena and Melina just said, regarding my sustainable development goal, my chosen goal to talk, which is about global partnerships, Oikos and its core structure is also a partnership. It is a partnership of students coming together for promoting sustainability in the field of economics and management. And Oikos, as we are doing now, we spread awareness regarding these sustainable development goals, the best practices. We bring environmentally conscious people together, and we also provide practical advice to individuals on how to achieve these goals. One important thing which I would like to point about Oikos is that as a student organization, it has much more power to usher change, since students, as Melina rightly mentioned, are in their malleable years, in their formative years, and ideas generated during this period can be so much powerful in the future, since every student is the future of any country, and it is these students which turn on to gets the big positions in government, in businesses, in the decision-making bodies, and starting an initiative for change in this period is very crucial. And that's what I think Oikos is, how Oikos is contributing.
Oikos shows that sustainability has no gender. Our project teams are very diverse, and our events, such as the expert talks, but also the podcast, we involve very many successful and committed women and men. Also, of course, our board is largely made up of women. So I do think Oikos Vienna contributes a lot to achieving gender equality and shows that, you know, also women make a very, very good board team. And last not but least, would you guys want our listeners anything else to take away with them today?
I think contributing for me also when doing the research and learning so much about your SDG, I feel like the SDGs could be something very far away from any of us. It doesn't really, maybe the way you feel about it affect us in our daily lives? Is something the UN deals about, is something maybe our government is concerned about? But I think what everything we just said really shows is how it affects us and how it should affect us and how important it is for us and for our future. And there's one thing I want everybody to take away from is to take it seriously, to start looking towards the future and to start taking actions on your own in whichever area fits best for you and wherever you can, but just make sure you contribute towards it, towards achieving them.
I think you said that very beautifully, and I totally agree. I like Oikos' slogan very much, which is be informed, get involved, make a difference. I think that should be like a lead slogan for all of our lives, basically. And especially with the SDGs, I mean, there are so many people in my friend circle who have never heard of that concept. If you're studying business economics or international development or something like that, you might be familiar with the concept, but there are many people who have never heard about it. And I think it's a very interesting concept that's worth taking a look into. So if you're interested, definitely check out the UN website to each and every SDG. There's so much information. There are also many resources about specific NGOs where you can volunteer and make a contribution. So inform yourselves, get involved, and really make a difference.
Then we want to thank everyone for listening, and we hope you could take away some things in the field of SDGs and that you will share the ideas with your colleagues, with your friends, and with your family. Hear you next time.
Thank you for listening. We are Oikos Vienna, students for sustainable economics and management education.
Be informed, get involved, and make a